Couchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Under the covers, I make a tent. It's my world that I made. Without you near me, no adventure. I want you to be. Oh.
We're back at the races. And as Mark was wrapping up, we talked about some of the, and as I mentioned, Steve Anderson's piece from last night. And one of the topics that hasn't even really come out, which was the idea for a fleeting day or two of having vets sign off on entries, putting another set of eyes on horses, that came up and then went away, and the air of confusion that really seems to be adding to the frustration levels and the exasperation, and now yet another wrinkle that. Just looking at the horses, I just talked to Mark about tomorrow and Friday that he won't be able to run, and so it's got to be just maddening. And we'll wait. I've been watching for Steve Anderson and hoping to get between now and Friday, hear from him and Brad Free and certainly Jay Bridman will join us on Friday. Sid Fernando's going to get our Sire Watch Pedigree Focus visit in, and brought to you by Hill and Dale, of course. And one thing I didn't get a chance to mention, I should have brought this up with Mark, because law-abiding citizen, if I'm not mistaken, was bred by Hill and Dale. So there's a perfect tie-in. And for those of you that enjoyed the Nick Luck and Chuck Simon yesterday, if you didn't hear John Secura from last Thursday, I would urge you to go to the archives. And we talked for 20 minutes about the sale and about the $3 million seller. And then for the next 50 minutes, John provides his outstanding perspective about where things are and where we probably need to be. Hammer, do you want to put the cans on for a little bit to hear Sid as he joins us? Right? Yeah? That works. All right. So the hammer's gonna go. He likes the microphone. You got the DJ appeal.
It's I'm getting ready.
I turned it off, but okay.
So I'm getting ready for my next life when I come back as a rock and roll star.
Well, you have it. Yeah. Now there you go. Now you're much better.
I said I'm getting ready for my next life when I come back as a rock and roll star when I learn how to work that mic and swing it around like Roger there. Daltrey. There's Anderson.
Hold on.
Steve. All right.
All right. Steve Anderson's on deadline, so he's...
You know what? Tuck that excuse away for the future.
Deadline.
I got deadline. Love to help
I'm on
you.
Deadline.
Got a deadline.
Sid Fernando joins us. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Rick Hammerly with us, too. And have you... met Sid ever?
We've never met. Only
hey,
over the radio. Hi, Steve. Sid, I'm sorry. And I got to say, as someone who's been in the game for a while, I'm talking about myself, and we try and learn a few things here about a lot of parts of the game, but one of the parts that I decided it was too late for me to get into was the breeding part and the sales part and all that stuff. And what I learn from people like you, and you especially, because you're on with Steve every week, about that part of the game is it goes on to show you that you never know everything. And I, at least I'm smart enough to know that I don't, but I do appreciate your segments on here. I listen more intently, I think, to you and other people that teach me things about stuff I don't know. And I'm hoping that's the same out there in radio world. So it's great to be alive with you.
Yeah, thank you.
So
now it's
teach me some more.
I appreciate those comments, but really I have to give kudos to Steve too, because Steve, your show is it seems like this week it's even been taken to a different level with Nick Luck, Privman, Sakura, Chuck Simon. Responses to what's taking place right now in general. Fantastic that you have this platform to begin with, but I think Steve and Rick, I'm sure you'll agree, I think this platform has taken on added importance even more recently, and that's really a testament to what you're bringing to the table.
Well, we know that it's all Steve, and literally this is one of those things that started in a garage 15 years ago, and I can remember in the early days before Steve with JJ, and I would go around and try and get people to come on the radio, and they would go, well, what are you talking about? Well, we did this little radio show, and well, you know, maybe not, and you really have to beg, and then, you know, since the last 10 years since Steve's been on, I just have to say Steve Bick. And the one thing that Sid is you'll agree with this, is because I don't have to tell people, what's he going to say? I said, this is all positive. You're not being cross-examined. It's all positive stuff. It all is there to help the listener and to help the game along in any way fashion. And so that's why it's so easy to get guests on, and good guests such as yourself that explains your facet of the game. When I'm on, I try to, you know, teach the people what goes on in the racing office side, and we just had Mark Glad on, so it's a 3-hour learning experience. Every day.
Thank you. There's so much. It's such an involved business, and you know, Sid, one of the things I think that makes, you know, these conversations and the 15 hours a week interesting and engaging and unique is that the individuals that contribute, especially the regulars, and then, you know, any of the ripped from today's headline guests, we all have a common passion and concern, and we also are invariably a thoughtful group of people, and the wide array of perspective and you know, the collective intellect goes a long way to reaching, I think, the widest possible audience. And people don't have to agree with me and my angle of things or you know, really anybody that's visiting on the show once or regularly. But it's all designed to help people understand the game better, enjoy it more, cash more tickets in whatever capacity they, you know, they come to the sport. You know, a casual fan to player to backyard breeder to commercial breeder, whatever it is, horsemen and we're all trying to pull in the same direction.
Before I forget, Steve, I was in Wichita this weekend, and Roger Lyons, who you've met, he's had worked Thoroughbred Consultants, partner with me. He has a friend.
Was that? I think was. I can't tell if that's us, Case, or if that's is that Sid or is that us. I think it's yeah, we lost Sid. Okay. I heard sometimes that noise you hear, there's Sid. A lot of times it's our connection that we lose. But in this case it was Sid's connection. He'll come right back.
Where's Sid call home?
Well, he's from Brooklyn, and he does then of course the work Thoroughbred Consultant office in Kentucky, but Sid has been spending the winter.
Oh, I'm back.
There you go. Sid has been spending the winter in Florida, but
I was just asking where you call home, Sid.
Oh, it's Brooklyn, New York. But I don't know, in the blank space, if he told you, I've been in Florida.
All right.
And I'll be here for the spring. There was a series of games in Wichita. I was over there, and I tweeted this. But Roger Lyons, as I was saying. A friend of his found that I was there and said, is that Sid Fernando from the Steve Bick Show? So I actually got a chance to meet him. Pat O'Connor, he sends his regards. He is a guy that got into handicapping listening to your show. It's very difficult to bet from Wichita, but he started following the show, started reading the books, following the ticket structure, and you know, there is a fan created right there, a better, and now he's, you know, he's playing horses. He's got an account, and you know, I think he credits a lot of that to your show.
Yeah, and I love. There's no better compliment really that we hear than that. That people, you know, people are enjoying the game more, and that's one way to do it is to understand the handicapping and bet making process, and that means more to me. The emails that come across on that front and so forth, and people that I meet, that means the most to me, and I appreciate you telling me, Sid. Sid, we're gonna turn to the fascinating story that you had a front row seat to, because you do work with Ben Glass and the Wests, and I couldn't resist on Monday the opportunity to have Ben Glass come on and tell the backstory. How great was that?
Yeah, it's fantastic, really. You know, it's interesting because Ben actually contacted us, Roger and me, about what really was the potential of his pedigree, on paper, of course. And we'd, of course, help with the mating originally. And this was now... after the horse was named and whatnot. And Roger, he's got a system of the Lion Score, which is a pedigree and analysis program, in addition to everything else we provide. And you know, he pointed out to Ben that there was a lot to like in the structure of his pedigree, and I think ultimately convinced them that this horse probably had some potential on paper, and it's excellent to see that even though these guys spend a lot of money, and I enjoyed the comment he made, by the way, with you about 110,000 is a lucky number for him, because not only did he buy Final Jeopardy, who's running in the wood for 110, he got Game Winner for 110,000, and this colt Maximum Security was an inexpensive homebred, so that's two Grade One winners right there for, I guess in today's parlance, a ham sandwich.
Sid, from a cautionary tale standpoint, is the message here, don't be too quick to give up on your young stallion and too quick to sell off the mare and so forth. I mean, they basically were liquidating this arm of the Gary and Mary West stable. And as Ben said, they tried to keep New Year's Day in the U.S. first, that they couldn't find somebody that wanted to take him on. And then they end up with Haras, whatever in Brazil. And, then the mare that they paid 80 for that was carrying Maximum Security, they basically give her away for 11 with a sibling in the belly before the first foal ever raced. I mean, what does a casual observer deduce about this, and what does it also say about how we judge young stallions early in their career with their progeny, basically barely hitting the racetrack and only really being judged on the sales ring?
It's the problem with these things are they're matters of economics, because it's part of the breeding industry, and so the horse starts off very inexpensively at Hillendale for 12.5 his first year. Second year, he drops to 7,500. Third year, he's at 5,000. You're dropping the fee to try to keep getting more mares. Ultimately, I think in his fourth or fifth season here before he was sold, it would be his fifth season last year, they weren't getting mares to the horse. And if you don't come out, Steve, in this game, to your point, lighting it up in your first crop with some two-year-old horses, some big winners, and that keep interest in the horse, economically, it's debilitating. And people are... you're forced to accept offers, sometimes from regional areas, other times from foreign countries. Now, a Goat Zapper is a great example of that. He started off for $200,000, eventually dropped all the way down to $20,000. Obviously, Stronach wasn't going to sell him. And then he had success later, and his stud fee has gone back up to $75,000, $85,000, whatever. There's a bigger horse like that. Blame is another mid-level story. Started off at $35,000, the most expensive horse of his year, along with Looking at Lucky and Quality Road. Dropped to $12,500 last year. Then he had a big year. Now, people heavily invested in those horses, Stronach and Claiborne, they were able to ride it out and stick with it. Gary and Mary West aren't really, they're obviously trying to make stallions, but they could pretty much single-handedly support their horse to that degree. And when you're talking about a smaller stud fee, it's very similar to baseball. You know, a high round draft pick, say, will be given several years of seasoning to be MLB ready, and there'll be a lot of patience with that kid because, you know, he was taken in the first round and they sunk, you know, $2 million into him. A 40th round pick, with a sign for $3,000, he's on a short leash. So in that sense, you know, the Ghost Zappers and the Blames are given a little more time, even though the stud fees fall. I mean, the same thing actually is true for Curlin as well. Curlin's stud fee dropped all the way down to $25,000 before he had his renaissance. And now he's at $175,000, you know. But the smaller horses, and it's not just New Year's Day. And by the way, you and I have talked about it. It's well known that as soon as a horse gets sold abroad, they get the grade one winner, right?
It's the craziest thing ever.
Exactly. And the same thing, I was having a text message chat the other day with Rocco Baldelli, a friend of mine. He's the manager of the Twins, but he loves to text about racing. He's owned horses. He had to sell everything to concentrate on the Twins now, but he's so into it. And he just texted me the other day about K-Charge Indy. Will he be coming back? You know, this horse, again, he was sold early. They got an offer they couldn't refuse, and they sold him to Korea. They had, Windstar had a option, however, to repurchase him by October of last year for, I think, a small premium. And I know Elliot Walden was tortured about it because obviously he had that good colt last year, was the Noble Indies, the colt on the Triple Crown Trail, by Take Charge Indy.
Noble Indy,
right, yeah. And then now he's got this other colt, from his second crop. So, you know, they decided eventually, I guess, Windstar not to exercise that option. But, again, it's a tough decision with these horses. And you're right. Sometimes you just need to be able to give these horses some time. But economics dictate that you know, it's a business, and unless you're, you know, heavily invested in that particular horse, like a Chuck Fipke or a Kenneth Ramsey or a bigger entity like Claiborne with Blame or Stronach with a Ghost Zapper, it's tough to weather the storm and to expect, you know, bigger things down the road.
This horse, give us a quick overview. I do want to have a stallion follow up question when I turn to the current, you know, state of affairs here, Sid, and I do want your feedback. But how about a quick glance at this, because we're seeing with an Anisheed mare. I mean, that's not something I don't think we've ever talked about Anisheed.
Yeah, he's a stakes place on an AP Indy. You get horses that, for one reason or another, will go to stud because of their pedigree and some form. You know, take into account another son of AP Indy that was not a stakes winner, that was the sire of the West champion, West Coast. That's Flatter, also by AP Indy, not a son of, not a stakes winning son of AP Indy. But a horse that started off at $5,000 and actually at Claiborne and has become, you know, a 40,000 stallion and a top stallion in the country. Anisheed started off in Florida. All these horses come in and they have some potential, but eventually it really gets down to, you know, the support and whether they can weather the storm. But he's got pedigree to him. And as John Sikora pointed out to you, with Army Mule, another case of a Senebaki Indian, the provinces in Maryland, Frisian Fire. But look what he's done, you know, with opportunity outside of Kentucky. So I'm not too worried that you have a broodmare sire that's not that well known. It's a frequent occurrence, and flat out is from the family. And there's some decent pedigree to it. At this point, this horse is, you know, already shown he's got a lot of talent, and it'll be up to him from here on in. But you know, he's a grade one winner already.
There's a couple of on the female family side, Sid, there's a couple of things that you should really touch on. Behind Anasheed, the creation of Little Indy, the dam of Maximum Security, came from a mating of Anasheed with Cresta Lil, who was a daughter of Cresta Ryder. You know, there's another obscurity. You and I love these. And then, stunningly, the third dam goes back to Double J. It's unbelievable that Double J is that close in a pedigree, in a modern pedigree.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things. Cresta Ryder, by the way, was a Niarchos horse, European race son of Northern Dancer, who stood, I believe, at Gainesway and was not a success whatsoever. Double J is a name from the past, and it's a name known for speed and durability. And, you know, all of these things tie into pedigrees. It's an oddball pedigree, obviously, just looking at it, with big names kind of behind them. It's something also to be said for New Year's Day as well, because New Year's Day is a son of Street Cry. He's actually had five or six black-type winners. This is his first, you know, grade one winner, obviously, but he has actually, he had that good G1 place. Philly was placed in the Starlet from his first crop as well. So, you know, he's a horse that, for a cheap, inexpensive horse, was just a runner or two away from, you know, actually headed the other way. It's very close in these cases where success or failure is determined by, you know, a horse or two.
Now, this really is unique, this page, and he's already written a story that frankly it's being mistold, and that was part of the motivation of having Ben Glass.
I think Ben Glass did a great job explaining the entire thing, and his commentary about, well, nobody else seemed to be smarter than they were, you know. And Ben is such a great guy, self-deprecating guy, but, you know, he was a trainer for 25 years. And anytime you sit down with this guy and talk to him, he's like Columbo. He acts like, you know, hey, what's going on? But he knows everything. The guy is, you know, incredibly smart. He's self-evasive. He's self-deprecating. But, you know, he's really on top of everything. And as he pointed out to you, he's not going to be at the Santa Anita Derby because he's with Jeff Kirk and Ocala overseeing the two-year-olds.
Well, he has really built an enviable program for Gary and Mary West, and you know we've talked about their approach before, and you know, the 110,000 up to about 500 or 600, and all male, you know, he's got a very singular Ben. You know, out there shopping at the direction of Gary West, and he wants classic Colts. He wants stallion prospects. That's his, and he's been producing them. So it's a program that's working.
That's exactly what he wants. And in fact, you know, one of the things that in our analysis for them that we do is that we have to actually, in our short list that we give to them, actually work to give an opinion on the classic potential of these yearlings. Because Gary's a very successful businessman, and he knows what he wants, and he follows this stuff. You know, he understands the numbers game parts of this. He understands if you stick with, it's like sticking with a positive EV bet. He understands that he's got to keep doing that over and over again, and eventually it'll work in his favor. And that's what he does when he buys yearlings, which is the primary part of it. Their broodmare brand has grown so much that they're breeding quite a lot of horses. Of course, they've got now American Freedom at Airdrie. They've got West Coast at Lane's End. So you know they started off at Hillendale in this new go around with New Year's Day, Power Broker, and Flashback. And again, with him, he understands that you cycle through some stallions, you're going to have some success, and you wait to hit the big one. And you know, it could be West Coast, it could be American Freedom, one of the last sons of Pulpit at stud. West Coast, an Eclipse champion. He's going to have Game Winner, obviously, going to stud. Son of Candy Ride, a champion. And Maximum Security is a grade one winner now. Whether he'll go to stud here or what, we don't know. But, you know, that's how it works.
Well, and we'll obviously, as we get closer to Kentucky, we'll talk about him. I didn't ask you straight out what your thought of the race itself and the way things unfolded, the decision-making process on Hidden Scroll and how they were going to approach the race. I thought that Castellano would be given a little more leeway to judge what was going on as opposed to it going in with a dedication of pulling, of coming back, you know, holding back and trying to rate. And frankly, you know, people are scoffing at Delgado's maiden, but that Bodie Express ran, you know, a very good race. And for him to keep pace and stay in contact, considering how Maximum Security was accelerating the second half of the race, the last 5/8, that was a good performance. I don't know if he... Right? I don't know how much farther he is going to go forward, but that was a good effort, and they both have paired up, essentially, their previous starts. There's no doubt that Maximum Security paired up. Bodie Express improved slightly, and then Shug's Code of Honor and Berman War, they regressed slightly off the Fountain of Youth. But your thoughts about, you know, going forward, these four... You know,
I was watching that race, and the first thing I noticed right away was that Hidden Scroll actually was kind of stuck on the rail, and he had to pull him up a few times. I don't know necessarily that he was just trying to raid him the whole way, but he had to yank on him a few times. He looked like he was pinned down. Maximum Security was walking the dog. The other horse, you know, this horse was kind of had no Hidden Scroll had nowhere to go. And for me, as soon as I saw what was happening with Hidden Scroll, I thought he was done. At that point, I was just hoping that Maximum Security, having set those slow fractions, would have enough to hold on. Obviously, it was going to be tough for the closers, and those horses that did close, you know, give them a nod. But this horse just, you know, as Ben Glass told you as well, you know, he took off and opened up, and so I, you know, it was a race where the pace absolutely helped him on the front end. He's not going to get that type of pace scenario likely in the Derby, but And the Hidden Scroll, he just looked like, you know, he had nowhere to go, and he probably should have just gone right to the front if he could have. The Shug's horse, he's an honest horse. He was very confident going into the race. And I don't think they've lost too much hope in him, and I think the distance, the Derby is going to help him. The pace scenario is going to help him. He's by Noble Mission, first crop son of Galileo and a full brother to Frankel. He's done well on the dirt. He's a horse you got to keep in mind too. There's a lot to take out of that race where you can apportion some serious looks to some of the horses that were behind Maximum Security. At the same time, for Gary and Mary West, you know, if you're going to have two horses in the race, what better way to go than to have a speed horse to set things up for a horse that loves to close?
And we'll see. We'll see who else gets added to the mix next, looking ahead to this weekend. And on that topic, anything as we wait for the draws today?
Well, you know, I was really you spoke to Ben Glass as we're on the topic of the West about Final Jeopardy in this race. You know, that would be absolutely astounding.
Yeah.
If that horse were to do something in the wood. I like Game Winner, obviously, in the Santa Anita Derby. That race with Roadster, Instagram, and Game Winner is going to be really interesting because, you know, Larry Best ostensibly shut down Instagram early last year to get him ready for this year, and presumably, I don't know. Was he supposed to even be on the Classics trail? I don't know. He went, then they shipped him out to New York for that race, and now they're putting him into the Santa Anita Derby. I mean, he's beautiful, you know, a horse, and he's shown a lot of talent, but seems like Roadster is going to play the same role that Much Better did in that race in New York. Yeah.
That's true.
What's interesting about this race, Sid, as you bring it up, of the five, you know, name horses that are going in there, I don't know who else is going in. Game Winner's got 45 points. But you look, if these horses are looking to move on, Roadster's zero.
Yep.
Nolo Contesto,
yeah.
Zero. Instagram,
yep.
10. And Extra yep. Hope, 5. And you'll never see this again, 5 3/4. sounds like a hat size. But So someone's going to be left out in the cold when the points go around. Was it 100, 40, 20?
20 and 10, yes.
So the 20 may not do a few of these any good. The 20 might help Instagram a little bit, but... you know, there's only a few doors to walk through, and we'll see which ones make the point spread.
No, it's a great point that some of these they need a walk off home run, and that's the case.
Yeah, exactly.
Certainly the bluegrass. This bluegrass field is going to be a capacity. It looks like a capacity gate, Sid, and it's. I don't want to call it a, collection or whatnot, but it is a bit of a grab bag lineup for those that have been following along. In some ways, Like It Hot is the most accomplished horse really going into this, which is a little crazy to think about.
Yeah, no, it's one of those. Years, it kind of reminds me of the frequently, like from the years from the 70s, maybe 80s, but I kind of remember like Cannonade's year, you know?
Okay.
That was the year where everybody seemed to have a shot, and I think it was a really big field that year, and, you know, you had years like that where you just didn't have a big, even the year with Foolish Pleasure, for example, he'd gone 7-for-7 as a 2-year-old, and he was a champion, but he was, people always felt like he could be beaten, you know, and if Game Winner is playing his role, it's opened up the doors for a lot of other people to try, and I think that's what, you know, every year you're not going to have a Justify or an American Pharoah or even a California Chrome. I mean, this is more like a parody year.
I'm going to make one observation, though. There's an interjection on this, and that is the knuckle curveball that the situation here has forced itself on things in general, and because we really don't know, guys, if Game Winner and I suppose Omaha Beach to some extent too, of course, and Improbable, if they had a normal work schedule, how would they be coming into this big mile in an eighth race weekend?
Well, you know, we talk about this all the time, and some of the guys that wait it out and, like you say, wait for the walk-off home run, that haven't run earlier in the year, and where they did have the chance here, but there's a lot of places to go. I'm not sure how much it threw off the game that much. You know, Bob's used to throwing going to the relief pin and Plan B all the time. Gonna run here. Maybe I'll move here. So it's not unlike him to have to adjust a little bit in midstream.
Agreed.
The good thing is for his big guys, they're not like Game Run. He's playing a home game, yep. Right? He's here. Roadster, he's playing a home game. The other one that's running in the Arkansas Derby, already been there. So it's not terribly,
but
I think more of a thing is, I'm going to read off the top 20 and listen to some of these names that you wouldn't think you'd be vying for Derby spots. You got Brendan Walsh, right?
We love it.
Brett Calhoun, which is great.
Which is tremendous.
You got Jason Service. I mean, Cassie's in there, who's in there a lot, but he's not, you know, a quote, one of those top Derby guys you think of. He's always there.
Some would say he should be.
Absolutely.
With the horses that have come his way.
You got Kieran. I mean, he's running second or third.
He's a very regular, right. But he always has a couple of prospects.
Then you got, of course, Belmont, who's definitely not thought of. You got Peter Miller, who I don't know if he's going with Gray Magician.
I don't think so.
But
we'll
you
find
don't
out.
Think
Aaron Wellman is going to join us in a little bit.
But he's in the top 20 in points. You've got Gustavo Delgado.
Mahesto. He's been to the Derby with Mahesto.
You got Richard. You got Dick Mandela, who's... Obviously, this is not his forte, but he can do anything he wants to with a horse. You got Mark Henning, who's, been trained all kinds of horses. He's not necessarily known for putting horses on the Derby trail. Blaine Wright, I mean, he's not necessarily known that's known past the West Coast had. So, I mean, these are guys that have Mike Maker, you mentioned him in the Bluegrass. I mean,
with the Kitten Joy.
Right, but he's not.
Ramsey horses.
But he's not.
No,
he's not necessarily top. But he's there.
And don't forget the Japanese horse is like 45 points, too.
Yeah, there's
Dermalouve.
There's the two slots. There's the Euro slot and the UK and the Japan slot.
So there's a lot of different names in here, which adds to the mix of why it seems like it's a toss-up if the heavy heads don't show up.
Well, Sid, my tendency in that is to run straight to the 2-year-old champion. At 7-1.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
We're 7-1. Who's giving out 7-1?
I just threw that number out there. I mean, who knows where we by the time we get through the weekend. Things will obviously.
Game Winner is a big physical horse. He's not a good workhorse. In contrast, Roadster is a horse, a light-framed horse, and it's one of the reasons why Bob Baffert didn't ship him elsewhere because of his physical makeup. So you got two physical contrasts in those two horses. For a horse that's not a great workhorse, for a horse that, you know, wasn't cranked up, Game Winner ran a heck of a race to lose by a nose. Bob knows that he's won this race. He knows that he knows how to bring a horse to the Derby. I mean, he did that, you know, we forget with American Pharoah was nursing that foot problem. He had to, you know, delicately maneuver that horse. He was able to send him to Arkansas against a weak field. But when he did arrive in Kentucky, he had to work for that win, you know.
Ed McMahon for the week.
Absolutely. And he's one of those horses that digs in. And
yeah.
there was a lot to like about that performance in defeat. And the same with Improbable, really, in terms of being likable in defeat, given how wide he was every step, which is it's going to apparently cost Drayden Van Dyke the mount, from what I understand. So Baffert was very unhappy coming out of really a pair of performances, even though Chasing Yesterday was a winner. He wasn't thrilled with that three and four wide all the way around. You can't ride every horse like they're 2-5, even if they are 2-5.
Yeah, exactly.
Said before we go, and Gary Young is going to join us for a little bit now that he's had some oatmeal. Your observations. I don't want to move on without you providing some perspective. You know, you've been.
Well, I'm going to give you some perspective on this. In this sense, you know, the problem that we have here is that you had the Jockey Club and their affiliates who've been pushing this integrity bill. They immediately jumped on it even more after the tragedies at Santa Anita by concurrently introducing that bill almost at the same time, almost as it was in concert. They speak about welfare. They came out with this white paper now about how concerned they are about welfare. But what they've never mentioned, Steve, if they're going to talk about this, is that they've never mentioned synthetic surfaces. Now, Jockey Club are breeders. They want dirt racing. It's because of the breeders and the stallion owners that a lot of these synthetic surfaces were taken out. Maidan was went back to dirt. Dirt horses have an intrinsic quality that even M.V. Magnier said, my grandfather, Vincent O'Brien, made a career out of buying American dirt horses, right? There is something to be said for American dirt horses. So there's this conflicting paradox where they're conflicting stuff, and it is a paradox that the people that are trying to harmonize internationally, who are wanting to get away with LASIX and medication reform, they only say one side of the welfare issue when there's statistical data from their own database that suggests another surface is far more safer than dirt. So that part of that equation is now getting exposed because PETA, which TSG brought into the equation, has spilled the beans on it that, hey, not only do we want to get rid of LASIK, but let's get synthetics back, right? And that, again, now is a conflict for the Jockey Club. They don't want synthetics. They want dirt. And they, in cahoots with TSG, have brought in PETA, and you know, it's a real mess, and that's where we are right now. Dianne Feinstein now wants synthetics. That synthetic word is out there all over again.
All right, and it's again one of the unintended consequences of a policy and an approach to the situation by Stronach Group to change the discussion. And,
yep.
You know, for the people that feel like this discussion should be advanced, there's nothing wrong. And I said this from day one, there's nothing wrong with advancing that discussion. But it'd be nice. And Graham Motion made this point in his TDN letter. we're happy to have this discussion as an industry. Let's do it in a measured, coherent fashion, not under, you know, this cloud of confusion and crisis. And what I'm going to get back to again, and frankly, Sid and Rick and Gary Young is sitting to the side. One of the things that's amazing is to hear from PETA's suggestion and from Dianne Feinstein of all people to say about having a thorough examination of how this all transpired. Frankly, if the Stronach Group had done that from word go, and Jay Pribman has driven this point home, if they had said, there's a bunch of things, just like in New York in 2012 in the task force, there's a bunch of things at work here. We need to get to the bottom of it. Let's put all our heads together collectively, because we, you know, this can't go forward like this. Let's understand what the contributing factors were. But instead of just addressing the problem, they tried to create a different dialogue. And exactly. So now, 3 weeks later, since the open Belinda Stronach letter, you've arrived back at the place where you should have started, which was addressing the 22 fatalities. And by trying to avoid that discussion, all they've done is make this all more confusing and difficult, and created more of a pressure cooker.
Involved in it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. By trying to evade responsibility, they've only made this worse, and they're still going to have to take the responsibility when there is the proper, thorough investigation. And just like the task force and the way so many factors, in addition to the surface, came into play. And that's what should have been done from day one.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you.
Sid, we'll have a lot to talk about next week. We'll be talking to you from Oaklawn Wednesday.
All right. Well, listen, great. Have a great trip. And Rick, nice meeting you. Steve, I'll talk to you next week. And
Thanks so much. Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. We'll stay right here. Mike McCarthy and Aaron Wellman are going to join us in just a couple of minutes. But Gary Young is on hand. How do you not have a chance to say good morning to Gary Young?
How are you?
Oh, you know, chipper for somebody that slept 3 hours.
Beautiful. You wake up like this. I mean, you don't a little water in your face and you're ready to go. I mean,
it's true.
I'm useless until I get my latte in me
and a banana usually.
Yeah.
And today some oatmeal.
Yeah.
Oatmeal's the key. Rosie's oatmeal.
Yeah, Rosie's oatmeal is absolutely.
Since I've left here, I've tried to manufacture something close to that, and I don't even like oatmeal. And Gina will come out and say, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm trying to make some oatmeal." You know, I even screw up the little packs. So you just add water,
right?
You know, so I'm happy to come out here and get my oatmeal and blueberries and strawberries and bananas from Rosie.
Well, I might be ready for a croissant ham and egg sandwich at 9 o'clock. Gary, I'm not even going to ask you about the Santa Anita Derby horses or the Santa Anita handicap horses. I'm going to ask you about Call Paul in what is going to be a war in that Bayshore on Saturday in New York.
Jesus, that is a war, isn't it?
How about that lineup?
I don't know.
Is Sparkyville going? Did Bondi?
I believe so. He worked fine here the other day.
Because Bondi said he couldn't find a plane, but then when Baffert agreed to go with much better, I think that must be room for Bondi on the plane.
Well, he's running. Isn't he running Baffert a horse in the?
No, and not in the wood.
He's not running one.
No, Desmond is not running. He didn't like the way he worked the other day, I think.
Okay, no. I mean, he worked average. I didn't know if he was running them or not. I mean,
he's just sending much better. So you're talking Sparkyville, much better, Call Paul, Mucho, and Mind Control.
Yeah. Tough race. You know, I mean, you know, Call Paul, he won the Swale. He wasn't cranked for it. I guess he's trained very well for this race. And this is proud. This is this is the King's Bishop in March.
It's unbelievable.
In April is what it is.
It's crazy.
It really is. I mean, you know.
Is the Carter also?
Carter's also, and the Excelsior and the Gazelle. It's
maybe we should have ran him call Paul and the Carter. It might have been easier against older horses. Yeah.
You got World of Trouble, though.
Yeah, that's true.
And Mr. Smaller bunch, I yeah. think.
Yes.
Right?
World of Trouble and Dino Rosso, among others.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So. But that's gonna. Are you staying? But you're staying here. You're not going to New York.
No, I'm staring at 3 weeks on the road between the Ocala sales and the Kentucky Derby. So I'll stay here and root him on from my living room.
I love it. Let's talk about this six pack here in California and your impressions after the past weekend, where Game Winner and Instagram, Extra Hope, Nolo Contesto, Roadster, and Synthesis all had final preparations.
I think much better. I mean, I think Game Winner will win the race. Period. I don't think Instagram wants to run that far. And I think Extra Hope could hit the board. But I think, you know, I just think Game Winner is better than these horses. His work with an older horse the other day, it was very, very, very good. He was better than him. And I think he's going to win the race. I mean, I'm not going out on a limb. He's probably going to be 6-5, 7-5, but I think he'll win the race.
How's Roadster looked since his win?
He looked okay. I mean, he looked okay. I mean, he worked with that horse by Orb that his name escapes me, that Baffert has down there that the other day, and he worked okay, but I preferred. I just think Game Winner is a slightly better horse, and I preferred his work for this race a little bit more.
Nolo Contesto for Sadler, there was such a excitement and buzz around him earlier in the winter, and then the little disappointment.
He didn't have the smoothest of trips. I think he's okay, but I don't think he's in Game Winner's class right now. Maybe later in the year, but I don't think he's in Game Winner's class right now.
Looking also, Gary, ahead to Arkansas, and how's Omaha Beach and Improbable looked since coming back from Arkansas?
Omaha Beach looked terrific. I was just flying in from Miami, and I just saw his work on XBTV the other day, and I thought he looked terrific. And, you know, Improbable, I saw him out here galloping about 10 minutes ago. He looked okay. I mean, he's... I've never been really convinced he's a mile and a quarter horse. You know, I don't think, you know, Drayden did anything drastically wrong the other day. But the horse did get caught at the wire, and they chose to make a change, which is their prerogative. You know, he's an eye-catching horse. He's got a lot of white, and he kind of bounces like a rubber ball when he's out there galloping. But my one trepidation with him is the distance of 10 furlongs.
Well, he's only got to go 9, though, next Saturday.
Yeah, he's only got to go 9 next Saturday. But the one after that, that one's bad.
You've already leapfrogged. Let's talk about the big cap. It's such an unusual circumstance to have the big cap and the Derby on the same day. And McKenzie, the choice made to stay at home and prepare for this, and it's a great showcase opportunity for him on Saturday.
Do you think the situation with Arrogate, as when he ran that tremendous race over there and then came back here and wasn't the same horse, led into his thinking of, you know what, let's stay home with McKenzie and have a nice year here in the States?
It might have, yeah. I mean, Arrogate, you know, you're right. He never replicated that jaw-dropping performance when he blew the start and ran Gunrunner down in Dubai again. That might have had something to do with it. McKenzie, he doesn't carry a lot of weight. I mean, he's kind of a Scottie Pippen instead of a Charles Barkley type of build, and I think that might have had something to do with it, but... He's a very nice horse. I mean, for this race, I give the nod to Giftbox. I give the nod to Giftbox.
Mm.
There's Bellafine out there right now.
I was going to ask you about her next.
She, Yeah, I mean, you know, I prefer gift box for the San Anita handicap.
Who else? And I have actually been so focused on 3-year-olds. Who else is intended for the big cap?
Maybe Dabster.
Blint Beachview, maybe.
He'll run that far,
right? Pavel just ran. A couple of them just ran.
Pavel ran sneaky good, by the way, on Saturday in the World Cup.
Yeah, he'd be coming back real quick. I don't think he'd probably run in the race.
I mean, I'm not talking about that.
Yeah. I think it's probably Gift Box and McKenzie, and the third choice will probably be about 8-10 to 1.
You mentioned Simon Callahan and Bellafina coming off just now, and she should overwhelm this field, no?
I think Bob, when he was up there today, mentioned something about she's going out of town, okay. I think.
Really?
Yeah.
I had heard it was going to be a rather small field. I mean, Simon, I guess he kind of rolled the dice, and of course he was in at Sunland for the Sunland Oaks there, and that was during the time when there was no racing here, wasn't quite sure, and then they announced they're coming back, so he pulled the plug there and decided to run here, and obviously it's a grade one, so why not? So, but she should lay over the field.
Yeah, you would think, and if mother's going to the Gazelle, maybe? Is he sending her to New York?
He said,
or is he waiting for the Fantasy at Oakland?
I don't know. He said something this morning. I was working, but I kind of remember Bob saying something about she's going out of town or something, or someone asked her about her and he said she's going out of town.
Very good. Well, what else, Gary, can we look forward to? Anything sneaking up when nobody's been looking?
There's some decent horses around here. I mean, Secret Spice ran really good the other day, and I think she's could be a force in the...
What a nice story that's turned into.
You know, I remember when she sold at Timonium, and I liked her, and she came in the ring. She got a little excited by because you can never school a horse to go in there. That's like, and she kind of reared up, and she lost her balance, and she fell, and she did a backflip basically, and she got up, and Tom McCracklin bought her for $125,000, and you know, she's always trained like a nice horse, but her workouts for this race were very, very good, and she won, and she paid a good price.
Yeah, she did. In fact, and I know Andy Harrington apparently lauded her in the report, and there was a rare comment on Twitter from Harrington who said he was surprised she paid that much, and I thought I'd never hear him comment on a ticket cashed.
Yeah. That was a good race for me, too.
Look at you. Look at the cat that ate the canary. You ready? You've been through the catalog for OBS?
It's 1,600. It's like War and Peace. I mean, I've looked at it. I've looked at it some, but it's, you know, it's a marathon sale. You just got to, you know, you got to kind of keep your head down and just keep you know, when the last day of previews are over, you kind of get the idea when you walk out of there that you've been like 8 rounds with Pacquiao or something like that. But then after that, you got to go look at them. Then you got to vet them. Then you got to decide which ones are going to make the final cut. And then all this and that and the other.
But we did. I did find a new restaurant.
Where?
In Ocala. Mike's Tavern. We ate there.
It was something else.
It was Mike's Tavern, out of town, a little like a roadhouse type of place.
Are there peanut shells on the floor?
Peanut shells. We were looking for blood and bone fragments.
The biggest best burger that you're ever going to find.
The burger the size of a frisbee. It was very good. A lot of fun. But Aaron Yagoda said, never again. He's never driving that far for a meal in Ocala again.
But I tell you, it was one of those places. I got there first. And I watched a couple of people go in. I said, I think I'm going to wait till the other guys get it before I go in. But
what, they have bib overalls?
No.
It's just a little dicey.
Know. Anybody go in, and it's very friendly. So
you got to hand that headset over to Michael McCarthy. Gary Young will obviously talk to Gary when we get to Derby, and we're going to sit Michael down, and we're going to get Aaron Wellman, two Aarons, and they're spelled together. Aaron, A-R-O-N, you go to mention, and Aaron Wellman, who's going to join us on the phone. And Aaron's got a goofy week, apparently, and normally he would come out in the mornings. Michael McCarthy joins us, and Michael, number one, I got to tell you, it was crazy how on Saturday at Gulfstream, I run into Aaron Wellman, the little general, and he's on the phone, and he's all animated, and he's like, "We just won the kill row. We just won the kill row. Congratulations."
Thank you. Thank you. Obviously, two horses ran super that day, Catapult, Ohio. Nobody really deserved to lose that one. I actually thought we were beaten. Took about 3 or 4 minutes for them to kind of make their minds up. Actually, it was 8 minutes, but it didn't seem like it was that long. About halfway through, I thought they don't want to see anybody get beat here, so it's probably going to be a dead heat, which, to my delight, a few minutes later, they threw up the white saddle towel, the two saddle towel, and we were declared a winner. I was blown away.
What made you decide to grab this horse?
Aaron Wellman had been tracking the horse for 2 years. He tried to buy him privately. Offer was not accepted. His horse had a bunch of back class, ran some very good races in defeat, even though it looked like he was getting beaten 3, 4, 5 lengths at a time. Running against very good company, we thought he was the kind of horse that could win us a race at Del Mar. Certainly did. You know, his time that day when we ran him for 28,000, claimed him for 50, ran him back for 28. His time was a fifth of a second slower than Catapult's was earlier in the day. He was one of seven, Drayden's seven winners that day. We decided to go ahead, take a shot, and the City of Hope Mile ran very credible that day as well. The turning point for him is we sent him to Arizona, and he was able to run against a little bit lesser class of horse for a decent pot, and he destroyed him that day and kind of turned the horse around a little bit.
I remember, if I'm thinking of the same horse, I remember he came, Paulo had him, right? Paulo Lobo.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit of a buzz first time out. I think he won his first time out. I think he paid around $20, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. That's
Stevens
correct.
Was on him.
Yep.
And a little bit of a buzz, and I think he tried to move him up a little bit off of that, and he just kind of flattened out, and obviously when he dropped him in, something. But I remember that horse when he first came around, that there was some, you know, buzz among some of the clockers here, and when he scored the first time out, we thought maybe, oh, this might be a good one, and that's probably what opened his eyes to Aaron, saying, hmm.
Definitely. Old class horse, very easy to be around, nice horse to be around. Does need a whole lot of training, a couple of easy works, and we try to spoil him a little bit, you know, graze him in the morning, that type of thing. Whatever we can do.
I was a little going to say you've done a great job, but I was looking at the NTRA poll, and City of Hope has moved up from fourth to third. So that's a great job of publicity or whatever, but it's, I mean, I can't now look at Michael here and think about that, you know, that big day in the sun out there winning that race, and you know, I bet you wish you had him back there still.
Certainly. I'm glad he is where he is. He's obviously become quite popular in the stud barn, but enjoy the opportunity to hopefully find another horse like him someday.
Casey calling Aaron Wellman right now. And, of course, Aaron also earlier in the day, the Eclipse partners were this far from winning the UAE Derby. And Gray Magician with Peter Miller, but you must have watched. Did you get a chance to watch, or were you busy to see Axelrod?
I did. I was certainly trying to keep my finger on the pulse of everything the Eclipse owns and runs. I thought the horse ran a very, very good second. I thought he was unlucky not to win the race. Obviously, you had a little bit of a rooting interest later on with Axelrod. He's been over there and ran in a prep for the World Cup and didn't bring his A game, and unfortunately didn't look like he really had it all together World Cup night either, but these things happen. It's a long way to go, difficult place to get a horse, you know.
Is he going to stay there, or is he going to come back here, do you think?
It's my understanding he comes back. I don't know when he comes back. We'd like to get him back here, hopefully, you know.
There's a lot of races out there that he can be competitive in for sure.
Most definitely. Hopefully he's in good form. We get him back here and find out what works best for him.
Well, as promised, Aaron Wellman joins us, and Aaron's got a crazy week back and forth to San Diego, and got some family things happening. But on the weekend, Aaron, you had such a big Saturday, and the win that came, the grade one, maybe a little unexpected. We've been talking to Michael for a few minutes. Congratulations on Ohio and the near miss in the UAE Derby.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Thanks for having me on. And wow, this is quite a foursome. Hammer, Vic, the white man, and Wellman. That's a dubious foursome right there. Thanks for having me on.
Aaron, the first thing I want to do while we have the chance, we'll visit about the horses in a second, but I do, with the unique opportunity to have owner, trainer together to bounce off each other. Aaron, your overview, growing up on the West Coast and spending a lot of your formative years enjoying the racing here, your thoughts about where things stand at Santa Anita and where we're going to go from here?
Yeah, look, we're absolutely positively in crisis mode at the moment. There's no other way to put it. You know, I don't really want to put a damper on this radio show or anything like that, but that's the reality that we're dealing with. And, you know, Michael and I grew up in Southern California. This is our old stomping grounds. This is where we learned to ply our trade, where memories were made, and what really created the passion for the game. And to see us where we are now is really disheartening, and it's, quite frankly, it's a bit scary, you know. Michael and I's paths have crossed, starting in Southern California as young guys and certainly not professionals by any stretch of the imagination in the industry. And then, you know, Michael, of course, began to cut his teeth in the training realm, and our careers have run somewhat parallel paths, although in different occupations, him on the training side, me in the partnership business and ownership side. And, you know, when Michael decided that it was time for him to hang out his own shingle and come back to California, it was just about the time that Eclipse was getting off the ground as well. We're both in the infantile stages of our businesses. And, you know, we made a big commitment to try to support Michael, and he's delivered the goods in a big, big way. And, you know, to see Santa Anita where we're at the moment and California racing where we're at the moment, it's not just a California issue. This extends well beyond California borders and certainly can become a national topic. But, you know, for guys like he and I, we're ambitious, we're motivated, we want to play at the top of the game. And we've got young families, we've made a commitment to be here in Southern California. It's, for lack of a better term, it's really a scary moment that we're facing right now. And you know, I've certainly got some opinions on the direction we should and need to be going, but I'll let you prompt me if you want to do so, Steve. But there's no question we're at a watershed moment as far as Southern California racing is concerned, and the bigger picture is certainly not without of reach.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to get tight for time today, but and we also want to see some clearly some other shoes drop and dust settle. Moving into, you know, the weekend, so we won't be able to really flesh out everything, Aaron, right now. I do want Michael to respond too. Michael, your feelings with what's transpired?
Yeah, it's been a rough couple of weeks out here. Very trying month. It was great to see racing back here last week. You know, a lot of guys on my side of the fence have been waiting for this. Unfortunately, we didn't have the best of days here on Sunday. You know, the game is changing. There are a lot of things about the game that need to change. Public perception is everything. You know, we live in an era where kids are rewarded for playing on a team, not winning, but playing. You hear people complaining about a $7 croissant. That's called free enterprise. You know, this market is a little bit different than many markets are. When you're on the Eastern Seaboard, I believe you've got five racetracks within 3 hours of themselves. Here, we don't have something like that. We're on a little bit of an island out here. It's a little bit of a niche product, almost boutique-like with the caliber of racing we have out here. I believe the plan was to kind of come on out here and this year and have more racing, more dates, more entries. You know, it's a tough thing to pull off out here. It didn't really work. We've had, obviously, some inclement weather, something we haven't seen in 30 years here, 11 and a half inches of rain, and I don't know what it was, 9 days or what have you. there's no easy fix here. Obviously, everyone is doing their best to kind of do whatever they can. We've got the state involved now, which is a little bit trying. But I think anytime you have a privately run business with state regulation, you're going to meet with some trying times. Obviously, we've had some groups that have been less than amorous of the product we're putting on out here, which is another thing altogether. I thought it was a wonderful piece here on Monday when Nick Luck came on the radio. Had a lot of very good things to say about animal welfare, about the state of our game, and about the state of the world we live in now. So, got a big weekend of racing here, you know, historic day, Santa Anita Derby, Santa Anita Handicap on the same day. Be nice for us to go out and, you know, show the public what this is all about here, really. How much the people care for their animals, how much the patrons like coming here. I mean, I'm sitting here looking out at the beautiful mountains here. Beautiful racetrack, probably my favorite place in the world to train a racehorse. To see what's going on here, whether I make my livelihood here or I'm just a spectator, it's tough to see. It's tough to read about. Unfortunately, a lot about what we read about is written by people who probably don't have their finger on the pulse like they should. Obviously, we have publications like the TDN, and the TDN is wonderful about kind of letting industry insiders know about what's going on here. Some wonderfully written pieces. I think Daniel Ross wrote a piece the other day that was very, very good.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the problem is those are reaching 10,000, 15,000 people.
It's internal. It's within all of our realm. It's not an outreach.
Certainly, it'd be wonderful if we could get an objective piece written like that that would show up in the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, the, you know, paper in Chicago, the paper
anywhere.
This is a big deal. It's not just a California problem. It's a racing industry problem. So hopefully everyone puts their best foot forward, and we go from there.
Exactly. Concerns us all. We're out of time today, but I reach out to Aaron on a regular basis and you, and so we will do more. I don't want to adjourn without some insight on Surface and the Quality Road Phillies debut coming up.
Yeah, hopefully we get lucky here. Big field, wonderful pedigree. That's about as good a race as bred race as you'll see in a long time. I can't tell you how much money there is in stud fees here, just to show you the game is healthy. Philly definitely wants to run a mile an eighth. We've been waiting a little while to run her, so hopefully we get the best of her here on Friday.
Aaron, best of luck with Surface. We will see you this weekend, and we'll talk soon. Thank you.
See you guys.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Anytime.
I appreciate it. And as it happens, here's Kip Elser again. This was a Kip Elser prepared product. Hammer, thank you. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you.
You passed with flying colors. And want to thank Michael McCarthy, Aaron Wellman, Gary Young, Sid Fernando, Mark Glatt with a absolutely wonderful half hour. I've received notes that people heard Mark Glatt talk more in that half hour than they have in a decade.
He's quiet, but he's one of those guys who doesn't say a lot. When he talks, you listen.
Exactly.
He's got a lot of sharp ideas, very intelligent guy out here.
Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, and then Hammer and I will pick it up again, and we'll have fields for Santa Anita Derby Day,
Keelan,
Bluegrass Day, and Wood Memorial Day. It should be an unbelievable Thursday and Friday. And, of course, we will also continue to weave in the news and views regarding the difficult situation here. But we'll overcome. Talk to you tomorrow.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on?
Tickets to Mikey the Belmont Stakes Racing
Festival.
And I'm going to
tell you about
an
offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.